Well, welcome. It's my honor to be here. My name is Wilson Smith. I'm actually a designer at Nike, and I've actually been there like about 36 years. So I've been a designer of the company, but also I've been a worship leader at Southlake Church. So that's a church out Beaverton Way, actually Lake Oswego Way. And you know, it's just an honor to be here with you. I'm off the teach some a little bit at University of Oregon, so I'm doing several things right now, but it's been kind of fun. But I like the ideas of some of the interfaces between evangelism and between our faith and what we do, you know, where some of the analogies in terms of business and that type of thing. So I, you know, I love Dr. Palau. I'm friends with Kevin and Andrew, and so it's really, you know, an honor to be here. First thing I kind of want to, let me see, I'll pull this closer to me just to be able to be able to work the presentation a little bit. But I started thinking about the whole focus around what I'm calling empathy and the role that empathy plays with both the creative world and with what we do in ministry. So the notion of empathy and the whole focus there. So empathy is understanding, and it's about having a vicarious experience of the feelings and the thoughts or attitudes of another person. It's like you're identifying with another. Putting yourself in their shoes is real important. And having empathy is really key in the world of design, but it's also likewise key in evangelism. So and that's sort of two areas of focus. Apostle Paul spoke this way when he said, you know, and I'm sure this is a focus scripture of interest, but just the whole idea that in 1 Corinthians 9, I have become all things to all men in the hope to save some. And a part that I really like in the message says that even though I am free of the demands and expectations of everyone, I have voluntarily become a servant to any and all in order to reach a wide range of people, religious, non-religious, meticulous, moralists, loose-living, immoralists, the defeated, the demoralized, whoever. I didn't take on their way of life. I kept my bearings in Christ, but I entered their world and tried to experience things from their point of view. I've become just about every sort of servant there is in my attempt to lead those I meet into a God-saved life. I did all this because of the message. I didn't just want to talk about it. I want to be in on it. So going beyond, you know, I like that message version that kind of explains and just what it means to really try to come alongside and be a part of where the people we're talking to. So my talk is around this whole concept of all things empathy. That's what I'm calling it. And basically, you know, design thinking in the whole world of evangelism. So how do you apply like design thinking in evangelism? And you may ask, you know, what does design and evangelism, you know, which is sharing the good news, what does it have in common? And the one thing that I'd say it has in common is the whole focus on people. People is the end user. You know, people are really, whoops, that's interesting. What did it, should it go away?
Yeah.
Okay. Has it been there for a while?
No.
Okay, it's gone, awesome. So people, all right. So people are the end user, you know, and they're beautiful. You look at them, they're unique. Another thing about them, they're not you or I, and a lot of times they're a lot different than we are. And they have, you know, they have equal and valid points of view that need to be respected. So we have an opportunity to really to connect to people. You know, when designing, and what we do a lot of designing, when designing for an end user, we often have motivations that align with their passions to basically satisfy their needs. So in some ways, it could be something like being a part of some exciting future world technology or a passionate social concern, or you're trying to help, at least in Nike, like we're trying to help a runner, Kipchoge, in the lower right-hand corner, for him to break the two-hour marathon. So that was a big focus. Another one might be like to in the upper left-hand corner to help adaptive athlete Justin Gallegos, help him break a two-hour half marathon. So these are all like motivations, and we're trying to get kind of inside the head of the end users and trying to help them accomplish their dreams. Now you may think that, you know, I'm not one of those creative types. You know, you may even say that you're more right or left brained. You know, and have you heard that term, right or left brain? So typically when they talk about the right brain is that more creative, expressive side. And left brain is a little more the cognitive, kind of analytical side. And so a lot of people say, well, I line up more left or right, so that kind of excuses me from one or the other. Like I can be irresponsible, or I can be, you know, creative, and or I can be, you know, just analytical and not creative. But studies show that the people who are the most creative ones are the ones who really engage their rational part of their brain as well, kind of like they can organize their creative thought. Or the more analytical people are the ones who tap into that creative analytics. So they cross over the other direction. So they're really utilizing both sides of the brain. So in that sense, I just challenge us to think of ourselves a little bit out of the box. If you've always thought of yourself as, well, I'm not that creative or whatever, just to think of yourself that, you know, everyone is a designer. The whole thought, when you think where it says in the Bible, or you know, in Psalms 139, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. So everybody is a designer. We have this. We have both sides of this, both sides of this equation working in our lives. So in terms of another point I want to share is you know, thinking about the role of empathy and how that plays in our brain. This is actually interesting, a neurological study. So if you get closer in with the brain, and this is a quote from In Neurological Science, so I'm just trying to get kind of in a place, but it says that when you, basically, empathy is often a motivated phenomena in which observers are driven either to experience empathy or to avoid it. So when you're faced with the choice of, with something that's pulling you empathetically, like say for example, if you're exiting the freeway and somebody's standing there wanting money or something, you're challenged with, you have to make a decision. I'm either going to give the person money or I'm going to avoid them altogether. A lot of times that, you know, you limit eye contact, you just kind of, you do whatever because you just, that's, empathy pulls you, so you have to either respond or not. And I think that's really interesting because it's the same way like when we're sharing the gospel, sharing the good news. There's a power, you know, when you're sharing the good news, people need to respond. And so it's, you're putting something out there that causes people to respond. And so that's part of the value. So thinking about empathizing, you know, how can we do it the most creative way? This is a diagram that has to do with design thinking. So design thinking was something that was established with IDEO, which is a design focus organization out of San Francisco. And IDEO speaks about basically looking at the way we design things. So the IDEO and the Stanford Design School, they're looking at, well, you empathize initially with the end user or whoever you're focused on, or say you're empathizing with a place where you're doing ministry and you're having a focus, so you're thinking about who they are. You define who they are, so you do kind of a definition. Then you begin to ideate, which is kind of brainstorm and think about what you could possibly do to how to reach them. You ideate, you prototype, and then you test it. So you prototype, and so if you comply that kind of thinking to what you're doing, say with a particular group that you're evangelizing or something, or that you are sharing the good news, you begin to empathize with where they're coming from. What places are they most excited about? What can I possibly do? And then you get inside of their world, and then you start to define who they are, and then you start to kind of try to create and think about ways that you can best reach them. So you ideate, you brainstorm, you know, with friends, you know, with people. You could be working with a chalkboard or whatever, but basically you ideate, prototype, and test. But one thing that I think is even even more exciting and something we can do creatively in evangelism is thinking out of the box so we can help them get to a new, richer solution in their lives. And this is like a looking out of the box. Like, what if you begin to allow the whatever you're brainstorming, whatever you've been kind of working at, if you ideate and then you kind of prototype out of that, test, define, and then you start to almost tell them a new empathy. And part of what I like about this thought, at least in the faith, is that, you know, we are new creatures in Christ, and I believe we get to see people in a new way ultimately. And so not just speaking to their particular situation, but looking at them and thinking out of the box and thinking about opportunities of you know, as you ideate, prototype, and then to where you're kind of defining them in a new way and empathizing in a even another different way. So that may be a little twisted, but I'm just basically trying to show ways of looking at it. The same of this was true that I learned in the world of architecture. So in architecture, they talk about things like form follows function. And so that's a real great equation. Like, say, the form of this room is working well, and it follows the function of the room. So, you know, we have comfortable seats, and everything's, you know, there's a function and a form that's following the function well. So that's a little bit more of an architectural thought. But then the beauty in architecture, I think, the opportunity is when we take it to a new level. So maybe we take the form and the function, and so actually the function can start to elevate the form, and you come up with a new expression. And so in the same way, the way this would transfer over for ministry would be that instead of just kind of doing what you have always done and expected a certain way, maybe you let that begin to speak into what you're doing and kind of look at things in a new way and look at things in a new creative way. So it's just the opportunity of that. And so this new expression is something that that I like to call informed empathy. And so you're beginning to have you're not just empathizing towards something, but you're getting to have a more of a focus and an informed empathy, something that has more passion in it. And that's what happened, was my slides just went forward the wrong place. I'll go to the next one. Okay, now here we go, informed empathy. So out of this piece, just to explain what's going on, is the whole idea of you can't just empathize towards there's an opportunity in informed empathy. And it's where you are basically, you come up with a spark, what I call spark, explore, and mix. And in some ways, the spark is like your calling, who you are, your call. Explore is the different ways you're creating. And then mix is the ways you collaborate. So in a sense, it's like call, create, and collaborate. You could use those same words, but I was thinking more like spark, explore, and mix. Spark is kind of like what gets you excited, what's the inspirational place. So when you're being creative, you're looking for something that's going to spark you, something that's going to give you a new spark. Exploring is the different things you're looking at, and then the mix is that you're open to input from the outside. For example, just to maybe talk a little bit about spark, this is a bit of my journey real quickly. So I'm a, might turn that down a bit. Anyway, I'm a young aspiring kid here playing with building blocks. Thank you so much. That's actually my favorite drawing I ever did, fifth grade. It was called Wilsonville. Okay, so I started getting a little older. My afro starts to grow. I get in the high school, afro's huge in high school. That's my sister and I hanging out together. We love the, you know, Jackson 5's greatest hits. And it's my parents at structures class down at U of O. I studied over in London for a while, did a lot of sketching and drawing. In Seattle as well, I love to paint. Eventually I went to work for a major architecture firm in Portland. And then Nike hired me to do architecture. And then eventually they hired me to do shoes, and I worked on those shoes. We sold about as many as On Top of the Table. It was a shoe called the Outbreak. So it didn't really do too well. But in my 35 years, almost 36 years at Nike, I've had fun working with major athletes like Andre Agassi or Miss Williams Serena or Michael Jordan's, designed a couple of Air Jordans. So I designed footwear for all those people. Shoes in the lower left-hand corner, I worked on those. Those have come back and been kind of a big as of lately. But some of the fun areas that I feel I've kind of tied my passion and my ministry and kind of what I'm about to would be in the middle. It's called N7. N7 is about Native 7. So the N stands for Native, and basically it's an Iroquois proverb where it says, consider the impact of your decisions on 7 generations. And so it's really a very sustainable thought. And so the N7 line, I've worked on that for a while, and what comes out of that, we've been, you know, designing products that work better for Native American community, and the proceeds, a lot of the proceeds go to Native American youth opportunities, youth foundations, that kind of thing. So it's been great. We've been kind of a worthwhile thing, getting to know more about their community, and then also, you know, giving back into that, and hopefully encouraging growth with the Native American athletes. Also, the lower right-hand corner, this was a design that was for a product for a guy named Matthew Walzer, who was a cerebral palsy victim. And Matthew, basically, he was moving from 8th to 9th grade, and he wrote a letter to our CEO, to Mark Parker, and he said, you know, I've always loved Nike, but you know, my parents have always tied my shoes because I had cerebral palsy. And he said, I just want to be able to tie my own shoes. So Mark took that letter down to a guy named Toby Hatfield, who's in innovation, believer, a great brother. But anyway, so Toby came up with this concept where basically you take the lacing system, take the laces, you tie it to a zipper, which is connected to a Velcro strap. So you open up the whole back of the foot, you slip your shoe in, put your foot in, and you pull it around and lock it down. And so this whole system is really cool. And so it basically, you know, it just takes one swoop around. So it's a great concept. And then the fun thing, Toby then worked with me. We wanted to make the shoe cool, so I just took a shoe that was called the LeBron James Soldier 10 shoe at the time. So we took that shoe and applied that technology to it. So when Matthew went to school, not only did he have the really coolest shoe that was out there, the Soldier 10, but he had a different version than anybody else. So his was really, really cool. So I think it's and there's a lot of stuff you can look at it online on FlyEase yeah, that kind of story. But anyway, that's just kind of the things that I think have gotten me excited and working with the company lately in terms of empathy and being more informed. So that's more of the spark and more of my passion. And now in the area of explore, I just kind of want to touch it. I'm going to touch on all three of these areas, but more on the explore side. I'll frame it up this way. There's basically Bill Bowerman was one of the co-owners, the co-founders of the company. And Bill Bowerman, he said, if you have a body, you're an athlete. So, all right, that's great. We're all part of that. You know, so it's a pretty inclusive concept. Another person, that's actually Phil Knight, who was one of his middle distance runners in the 50s. And so Phil Knight's the other co-owner of the company. And he says, listen to the voice of the athlete. So in the context of if you have a body, which everybody is an athlete, and listening to their voice, I've had a really excellent time working on a project which has been called Adaptive Athlete Design. So it's been an empathy-driven design challenge. And I've been working with University of Oregon students, and we've been doing it now for 8 years. We do it about every winter term, and so we do this Adaptive Athlete Design. And it's been really fun. We, you know, athletes who have disabilities or, you know, challenges, physical challenges, we can then work with them to create apparatus to help them perform better in sport. And it's amazing, miraculous, honestly, what young people come up with in 10 weeks. And now that we've got these maker communities where they start making amazing products. For example, this is a guy named Kip Westland, who is a triathlete. So we had three students working with Kip doing basically run, swim, and bike. Those three people were doing run, swim, and bike. But Kip has a degenerative body condition where his body is slowly kind of losing movement. And so he has this line, he says, hey, if you don't use it, you lose it. And so that's really, he's got an awesome, you know, glasses half full kind of way of thinking about life. So he's really fantastic. But anyway, Malia Cooper is the middle student there. And Malia was working with Kip, and she wanted to really understand. She's a great swimmer. And she said, I strapped my legs together. I couldn't do it. Trying to swim without the use of my legs gave me an empathetic perspective of what it's like for Kip to swim. And so she was, you know, she tested that out herself. So part of that empathy piece is to identify and to really start to really see yourself as them. And so that's what happened to Malia. Well, she came up with a really creative solution. And this was called, she basically created this thing which kind of captured his legs together. And it allowed him to swim better and to move through the water, and to the point where it was 1.8 seconds faster per lap as they developed this right way for it. And he actually, Kip and her, they came up with the name. They called it the Mermance. So it was like, you know, these Mermance, you know, kind of pants. But the cool thing about it actually, now she's doing it in smaller sizes. It's really something that helps able-bodied kids learn how to swim better and the way to move through the water and kind of, you know, because a lot of times they'll fillet around or whatever. And so the opportunities that may be acutely defined begin to have opportunities for a much bigger masses. So that's a pretty fun thing. One of our students, his name's James Tuttle, he said the product design process has empathy built into it. But like many things, it comes down to the designer allowing themselves to let go of bias. So, you know, so empathy is another aspect of good empathy is to let go of bias. So that's, you know, to not to have an agenda or to basically be about a little bit more open to what that person would bring. I'll show you one more quick story of this. This last year we worked with wheelchair basketball. We were actually working with the Wheel Blazers. And so it's pretty fun. You know, we're basically with them. We're trying to learn about their game, trying to see is there anything that we could possibly do to, you know, come alongside and help them. And some of our our students were looking at all kinds of, I don't know, things to help. It's amazing when a Wheel Blazer player gets together, they have like a different type of chair than the regular chair they're using, so the whole apparatus, the whole moving from one chair to another is really challenging. So anyway, we were talking with the athletes, and one of the athletes, this guy named Rico, he said that I just wish you guys could play ball with us. And which sounded, you know, such a logical thing. I mean, he grew up, you know, he's a basketball player, and now he doesn't have the use of his legs. But he's like, I just wish you could play a game of ball. And that really inspired this one student. Let me see. I'll get to that. And so, basically this one student named Brian Hoke. And he's like, you know, how could we play basketball with adaptive athletes? Because, you know, how could we just do a pickup game? This was earlier this year, he thought of that. Well, Brian comes up with this really great solution, which I thought was profound in its meaning. But the whole idea is, rather than to try to figure out a way to get them to stand up and play with us, why don't we sit down and play with them? And so part of the idea was, if you could take an existing chair, and then you could basically somehow get wheels on the chair, because chairs are pretty strong. It's amazing. Chairs are made to hold up people, and because they're assuming that you have all of your sternum control and everything else. But in a wheelchair, it's more trying to give you a more additional support. But a regular chair is set up just to kind of give you comfort. So if you could take a chair and actually add the structure to it, that you could, you know, potentially sit down and play. And so this is Brian actually working with one of the wheel blazer athletes and throughout the term and kind of showing different kind of prototypes that he was doing. So the final solution was basically just to take that ordinary chair, be able to lock it in, and this is something that he built. And so this is all within a 10-week period of time. But he's basically looking at the opportunity of just all these details and everything of what this chair could be about. The interesting thing is, if you look at a regular wheelchair, especially a sports chair, they're about $20,000, 20 plus. You know, this apparatus that he created netted out to about $4,000 of what you could actually do, and that's just doing the first ones. So one of the cool things was, here's Brian at the end of a 10-week period of term of school. Here he is playing basketball with the wheelchair team. And one of the great thing about it with the Wheelblazers is that the Wheelblazers coach is actually an able body. He can stand, and so this was an opportunity. Now the coach could use this chair and he can play with his team, and that gets him into the motion of, you know, shooting a basketball from sitting down. And so all these kind of things, the opportunities are really great. And this, honestly, this project inspired me because it made me think about even like our Lord, when he says, you know, he gave up his divine privileges, you know, and he took on a humble position to become us, you know, become like us. And was, and so rather than to try to get them to stand up, we actually can sit down. You know, that's kind of a different way of thinking. And I think that's kind of the way we can think in bringing the good news, is how can we connect to them? How can we relate to them? How can we go that extra mile? This was, real quickly, it says, designing with empathy. These were some of the things we would identify. And so some of this I'm talking with students about, we have to choose empathy, but they're also cross over into spiritual thought. Choosing empathy, you know, allowing your inner voice to lead with these kind of design opportunities. You identify what the opportunity is. You design with others in mind, not about yourself. And then you really embrace their critique. So that's a big thing. I think it's an opportunity to listen to who those end users might be and really get an idea of what can they possibly be. Because I imagine a number of us have different types of ministries and things we're focused on, and so how can we better serve them is kind of what we're trying to say. You know, I think we kind of know, you know, this is, you know, way bigger than just design. You know, I like this scripture, but, you know, in humility you count others more significant than yourself. So that's part of the key to it, is to really see others as more significant. Last example I want to give is the whole idea around mix. And so I think with mix, the interesting thing is that you really have an opportunity to go beyond what would be the the mix would be about collaboration. It's about opportunities to go beyond, say, just what is just when inside your own head, but really an opportunity to connect with others and to collaborate a little bit. A great place where this was recently experienced, and I'm tempted, I don't know, I was, this next part I'm going to do, it takes about a minute, so bear with me if it gets a little too weird. But it takes a minute, but I was going to do this, and it probably works better with it. But whatever. But I just, in thinking about the notion of mix, I think one of the best examples that I could think of in terms of like going beyond like a collaboration would be like when they mixed the beginning of the Birth of Our Nation recently with like hip hop music, and so they kind of came up with this whole thing, you know, basically just a little bit. How does a bastard orphan, son of a whore and a Scotsman, dropped in the middle of a forgotten spot in the Caribbean by Providence, impoverished and squalor, grow up and be a hero and a scholar? The $10 founding father without a father got a lot farther by working a lot harder, by being a lot smarter, by being a self-starter. By 14, they placed him in charge of a trading charter, and every day while slaves were being slaughtered and carted away across the ways, he struggled to keep his guard up. Inside, he was longing for something to be a part of. The brother was ready to beg, steal, borrow, or barter. Then a hurricane came and devastation reigned. Our man saw his future dripping down the drain. Put pencil to his temple, connected it to his brain, and he wrote his first refrain, a testament to his pain. Well, the word got around, they said, this kid's insane, man. Took up a collection just to send him to the mainland. Get your education, don't forget from whence you came, and the world's gonna know your name. What's your name, man? Alexander Hamilton. Okay. Anyway, so, but that's just, I mean, that's, and that's also our, you know, our people that we're connecting with. You know, who are these Hamiltons that are coming up all around us all the time? Well, this story about mix and, or I'd say collaboration, I think was really brought to life, and this was actually a few years ago, but I think it's a pretty significant story, and it's kind of evolved to where it is today. But the notion of Roosevelt High School, which is in St. John's, and this was a situation that was really very connected and collaborated on well with the Plow organization pretty much leading the charge, and then others collaborating with them. There was a great need where basically the school, the grounds were being condemned. And there was actually the track was condemned as well as the grandstands, and then there's just a horrible problem with their locker rooms and everything. It was really very bad. But in terms of a collaborative team, no one of these people could possibly have got it done by themselves. But there needed to be a team, and there needed to be this mix. And so you had Kevin of Louis Plow organization, Kevin Plow, and then there was a guy named Mike Bergman out of Nike who was really involved in it. I was working with Bergie a lot, but anyway, I had a relationship with all these people, but Mike Bergman, then Pastor Kip at South Lake, where I'm a part of, he was involved in it, as well as Rich Rucker, who was the development director out of Roosevelt. So these are kind of like key people are kind of playing roles, but really what they are is the people are there. It's a person of vision, and then there's the catalyst, which I'd say Bergen. Big vision, of course, was Kevin Plow kind of bringing the need to reach the community through the season of service and all that he was doing with vision, and then through the Plow organization. And then Mike Bergman was more of a catalyst out of Nike, and I had a meeting where I brought all the middle level managers together who were Christians, and we basically, Mike Bergman said, hey, you know, I've got this he's looking at BlackBerry, I've got this friend, his name's Rich Rucker out of Roosevelt, and Rich has a need, you know, that school, you know, that they could really use some work. And so then you know, Kevin goes to Pastor Kip, who's my pastor, and kind of says, hey, you know, we really want you to be one of the churches that helps supply. And Pastor Kip gets the vision and says, hey, just let us be the church that takes the lead on it, because we'd love to, you know, just really go for it. So all this resource and vision catalyst all kind of came together. And so then, you know, when it came time for like a day of service, you know, more people, the community, Nike, and our church, and everybody showed up, and it was just like this amazing thing, just in terms for the school. And the amazing thing is, you know, you're much more influenced by people who believe in you than even the other people you believe in. I'm not talking about the Lord, but, and so these students start to see that people believe in them, and they were about ready to close Roosevelt. It was actually going to close. That was on the docket to close, you know, and that was kind of the core school right there in St. John's. It was, you know, and you know, it would have left a gaping hole, but Roosevelt was going to close. But now the school would be being transformed, you know, hundreds of people, South Lake gets really involved, hundreds of people show up at all the girls basketball games. I mean, there's just relationships going between a church and a school, so it's really fun. And this is a little quick little 2-minute blurb about a movie that tells the story. Thank you.
1 out of 7 kids at Roosevelt is homeless.
People are very, very clear in some cases. I don't want my child going to that school.
1 of the things about the suburbs is we're nice. And I did a study of the word nice once. It comes from a Latin word meaning to ignore. And we are good at ignoring. And the original idea was simply like a one-day cleanup day.
I knew a lot of people would come, but I didn't know how many. And, you know, I was more shocked than anybody when 1,500 people showed up.
Everybody was kind of walking around with tears in their eyes because something had happened, you know, and that was kind of the start of it.
I've never seen anything like it. I hope more churches will emulate what South Lake's doing.
Well, the school, they're the experts, the educational experts. They know what their needs are. Can we help fill the needs?
She began a clothes closet where people could donate clothes and every morning kids could come in and basically take what they needed, no questions asked.
There's a fear there that, you know, these church people are going to come in evangelizing and trying to get all your kids and your staff saved.
The best way to convince people that you don't have an agenda is to not have an agenda.
South Lake's approach is more of, let me show you through the works, through my actions, what love really is.
Turned out to be a lot more stuff off the field than on the field, which was hard. Day by day, it was very hard for me.
I told him, Neil, they're not going to care who you are until they know you care about them.
You know, it's not about coaching there, see. It's about mentoring and being a father and being a brother and being a parole officer.
Suddenly Nike decides they're going to give these kids uniforms. And suddenly Nike decides they're going to head up the effort to get an artificial turf put out there. Suddenly Nike just decides they want to be part of what's going on.
I was so jacked, so excited. Have our kids, have our players get to play on a real field.
This is a beautiful thing. This is putting your faith to work, putting legs to your faith. And if there's a way to continue this, I want to be a part of it. I want to support it.
It's a beautiful story, I think, of a church showing up just to support an underserved school.
So you probably have seen some of that story before, but it's kind of, I still think it's a great example of kind of like collaboration. I think, you know, of that remix, the notion of collab. And so when so the initial need that was laid out by Rich Rucker, the development director, in terms of condemned track and grandstands, you know, turns into be something they call Hayward Field North. So it's like the best track, you know, north of Hayward Field and in Eugene. And, and Nike got involved. They got excited because they saw really the spirit of all the people and the church and not just church, the community, everybody coming together around Roosevelt. So it was uncanny kind of rally. And it was very grassroots and very cool. But you know, Plow was a catalyst. And, this was a fun story, and the great thing that in some ways too is how that's evolved. So that was a relationship that lasted, 8 years. We'd do a cleanup day, I believe, about 8 years until about, I think, a couple years ago. But now we've evolved to this reading program, to where now we go to a number of schools, but primarily there's still a little bit of relationship with Roosevelt, but it's more at a much younger age because of a vision around if kids are read to at a certain age, they're able to land much better later on in life. I was trying to get some of those stats before I came over here, but anyway, that's where that's evolved to now. So it's a very kind of personal and experiential thing, but it was birthed out of this vision, and now that's becoming a national movement as well. Besides church schools, there's also some of these reading programs. So once again, as I mentioned, the whole idea of informed empathy and coming up with new expressions and new opportunities, just kind of brainstorming out of the box from, your spark, your own personal kind of inspirations, exploring the opportunities and then mixing with other people. And, I love this, basically, the key scripture, which I think is what it's all about, is the opportunities of becoming all things, in the hope that we might save some. So that's pretty much what I wanted to bring. And so I think that, out of this, and I know this session, I think we basically have, what, do you have to about 4:15? So 4:15. And so, maybe you know, they say like Q&A, maybe there's just a little bit of Q&A, maybe we do a little bit of a workshop, but I don't really know if we want to do that. Maybe we can just do more Q&A or just discuss some of these concepts and see if any of this makes sense or what you guys think. So any thoughts or Q&A? Yes, sir.
Excellent presentation. Thank you for coming.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm honored. Yeah.
So we are evangelists.
Right.
I mean, that Roosevelt High School, no agenda, the people appreciated that. They weren't there just to get them born again.
Right.
But ultimately, we are.
Absolutely.
We do want to get them born again, correct?
Yes, we do. So no, I got you.
We go out to help, and we want to help, genuinely help, but ultimately we want to get them born again. Is that correct?
Yes, I understand what you're saying. I think that in the case of, I think a different, and you probably have a point of view on this, but I think that that's always a goal, an end goal. And I think that with varying kinds of connections and relationships with varying types of people, you have either an immediacy of the agenda, like maybe the notion of getting people born again, maybe you have a And this was a little bit more of a long range goal. I know that the Palau organization, they were trying to fuel their event that was happening out the waterfront. So at the time they were doing, you know, city serve, and so basically, you know, helping the people by means of a way to inspire them to eventually, hey, we have a relationship, come down and join us on the waterfront. And in that context is where the salvation piece would come. I think that, you know, when a church helps a school, there's relationships that are built, and maybe we start going to church together. You know, I think that everything ultimately has an end goal of getting there, but some of us are a little more relational over time. But some more evangelist efforts are more immediate, and I think that's part of the vision of the evangelist. Is
the idea that the people can tell whether you genuinely care or not.
Absolutely.
That you're really there to help them.
Right.
And ultimately, it could lead to them being born again.
Absolutely. I think that's kind of what I'm thinking with the whole empathy piece as well. You know, when I've been working with adaptive athletes or something, it's amazing. When we have our design reviews at the end of the year and we have athletes with disabilities or whatever in the room and teachers and everything, everybody loves to come to that because it's almost like it feels like church. I mean, there's a lot of such great energy going on, people talking. There's a lot of, you know, people know where I'm coming from, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of sidebar conversations, a lot of things going on, and granted it's not church, but it points towards it, you know, that people understand what's going on. So to me, I think that and the other piece that I was trying to say about the empathy thing was, when I say spark, it needs to align with who you are. I mean, that stuff aligns with me, you know, Hamilton or whatever. All of that aligns with who I am. But I think that each one of us get to kind of define what is the thing that sparks us, and how can I then, you know, engage that the best way, you know. So
yeah, that empathy is important. I've never putting that empathy with evangelism. I've never thought of that before.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, well, awesome. You're very nice. Thank you very much. Yes?
When you talked about, of course, the design of empathy, and I think I kind of followed your storyline as it related to the school, choosing empathy
right
with the school, allowing your inner voice to lead, so the person that, you know, we've got to do something about this, right?
Uh-huh.
And then identifying the opportunity, which was the big picture at the school.
Right.
Design with them in mind.
Right. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Uh huh.
And then embracing their critique of how you're approaching that. Is that?
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's really good. And thanks for doing that. I never put those two together, honestly, because one kind of came, you know, some of that evaluation came after the event at Roosevelt. But I think that's very good. And I do like the idea of embracing their critique, because it's amazing when you hear what they have to say. Like the teacher, Charlene Williams, when she's like, are these people going to come out here evangelizing, and what, you know, what's going to kind of happen? And then they start to trust you more over time when they realize that there's, you know, that there really is a genuine desire to help or to come alongside, and for us to get outside of our own selves. And so that becomes part of the, you know, part of, they become more open to us, and so we start, then you start that relationship, and out of that can really flow great ministry out of relationship. So I think that.
Okay, so another question I have. So we have with our ministry, which is evangelism with women. So we have
nice.
Our people that purchase our product or use our product or program are Christian Women Share Jesus.
Christian Women Sharing Jesus.
Yeah, Christian Women
nice.
Sharing Jesus in their context. Right?
Beautiful, beautiful, okay? Beautiful.
So, but ultimately, thinking about the design process,
uh-huh.
we need to have empathy with the woman that they're sharing Jesus to.
I think that'd be exciting. Yeah, that'd be an interesting, you know, it'd be very interesting to see what does that look like.
That's what I was going
to
say.
You know,
ask.
Because, God, I hear you, because I think, because it would be fun to have, is that like, do you have a workbook, or how do you guys?
Well, we have outreaches, so we have programs.
Uh-huh.
So where a woman can do some sort, okay, I'll give you an example. So we have an event called Story Marks, where a woman with a tattoo will share her story. That, you know, she'll be photographed, and it'll be kind of like a gallery, and she will share her story with women in her community. And
wow.
there will be Christian women that will share the story of their tattoo, which is a story that has to do with their faith.
Awesome.
Okay? And then there'll be an invitation to, you know, consider faith for themselves.
Nice.
Okay?
Nice.
And so the Christian Woman Sharing Jesus, who is the volunteer, is using our product or program. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then also there are resources for the person that is that she is speaking to,
right.
which is the woman that does not know the Lord, but
right.
has a desire to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so we have kind of like two different products, you could say.
Yeah.
And two end users. And so when I'm thinking about the design
yep,
process,
you
and
do.
Designing with empathy. Do we design with empathy for the Christian woman sharing Jesus, or do we design with empathy with a person that doesn't know Jesus yet?
Mm. Well, you know, it sounds to me, looking like if I did a diagram, a design diagram, it's kind of like, you know, your end goal, it's almost like here's what you're designing, and you have your person that you're kind of first channeling through, and then they're working with this person, so you're kind of creating this kind of a diagram, and then hopefully they come to this kind of conclusion, you know, in to receive the Lord, and then maybe there's some follow up. Yeah, they could come back, you know, so maybe there's some kind of a diagram like that or something. But if it is, I think all along the way it feels like yes, there is. You know, there is empathy in each one of those positions that you get to kind of speak into, and particularly the first two, you know, just kind of imagining who she is, you know, empathizing toward your Christian person who's sharing, and you're empathizing, then you're defining their experience, then you ideate, prototype, test, in a sense, what is there, you know, and then you get that kind of figured out, and then imagine them doing the same thing, and what kind of hurdles do they have in terms of framing it up or something in terms of this to this other person who does not know the Lord. And so, you know, and the interesting thing is really, I like that you're giving this person a voice. I think that's one of the strongest points of that to me, because I like you're giving them an opportunity to tell their story, because that's, I think that's where everybody starts, is to be able to tell that story. So I love to know what their tattoo is about and why, and go wherever they can there, and then this person, hopefully when they tell their story about their tattoo, there might be some kind of relationship, or this person might could think about how Jesus, maybe there's eventually going to be this person would ask that person, would be open to this person allowing them to kind of show how Jesus can touch this part of their lives or whatever, or part of that expression. But I like that you're really giving them a point of voice, because I think that's part of the importance, I think, of the empathy piece.
I think we're starting this design thinking process within our organization.
Uh-huh.
But we're thinking about the user of our product, right, which is the Christian Woman Sharing Jesus. But, you know, I was thinking just how your presentation was, you know, are we doing enough about really thinking with empathy?
Right.
That's receiving the message.
Mm-hmm.
And so
You know, the interesting, yeah, right. Well, you know, the interesting thing about, yeah, people, like I was thinking about, as I was working on this, even the first, one of those first slides kind of shows people. And when you're looking at a lot of different people, and they're obviously not necessarily Christian people we see, you know, they're different types of people. And so how do you embrace them, allow them to be the very vehicle that, you allow their story to be the vehicle that you can use to help lead them to Jesus. I mean, you know, because I think people get kind of worked, you know, through their story as well. You know, I think the Lord works in that. I'm not compromising the message. I'm just thinking, you know, like when I'm working with an adaptive athlete, I'm trying to help them, serve them, do all I can, and then in those 10 weeks, and now we end up with a relationship, and then now we can go further and deeper, and then I can tell them more of what my motivation is. So maybe part of it is to meet, you know, just like in any kind of a handout, quote unquote, but you're basically trying to meet their needs, and then you can then hopefully have an entrance to meet other needs, like spiritual needs. So it is kind of maybe more similar to the a gospel message, but I just think it is, I think it's really, I think it's good not to fear empathy, because when you look at what, you know, so many moves of Jesus, I think he, you know, I'm thinking of the woman at the well, you know, I'm just thinking of stories where he will really step into her world, you know, and he steps into her world, and she's like, you know, wait a minute, why are you a Jew coming to me asking for water? You know, that was not common in their context. But he went into her world and really began to dissect and opportunities arose, but really out of him asking her for a glass of water, which is really great, or for a cup of water or whatever. But I think so. Any other thoughts you guys?
When you're designing for Nike, is empathy a part of this?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I try to think of things. A lot of times, I'm always inspired by. I try to see if I can tell stories that mean something, that maybe point towards the Lord or some positive thing in general. You know, there was times when I mean, I could show you some shoes that I worked on that. There was a guy, David Robinson, who's a strong believer and a basketball player, and he, I worked on his shoe for a while, and one of his shoes I had, it had three parts, you know, and I was like Father, Son, and Spirit, and the airbag was where the Spirit, you know, I mean, I was talking to, you know, so we talked about all of that stuff, and I was inspiring David because I know what motivated him, and I knew that he was like, oh, wow, and he just loved the concept, and, you know, and actually, we didn't necessarily, I don't think that message got out as a Nike message, but I think it. I think there was things they recognized the three, and you know, three kind of got out there a little bit, and so you know, people could read into it maybe what they wanted to, but you know, so there's that. That's more of a direct one. I'm trying to think. It seems like there's a lot of. I've always tried to kind of see if there's a way to promote a story that's you know helpful in some ways. You know, spiritual, but you know the number one thing I need to do is make a shoe that worked. You know, and I need to make a shoe that performs. So you without something that works, you don't really have anything. So you almost need to kind of make sure you prioritize. But then then the Lord opens other doors. You know, I mean, I remember working with. I'm just trying to think of examples. Well, I was working with Michael Jordan, and we. You know, just over time, so this is naturally out of relationship. I was trying to demonstrate to him what we were. I was inspired by jazz music on a shoe, and jazz has improvisation involved in it. So and the way improv happens is you have a steady rhythm underneath, and then you kind of have a private interpretation with your saxophone or whatever. That's more of the improv. Well, we wanted to demonstrate that, so I brought a keyboard and then a musician from his record label he was investing in, a guy named Mike Phillips anyway. And so he came out and I was playing keyboard. And so initially I started playing Amazing Grace. You know, I just wanted to play something that he could then play over the top. And so then Michael's like, oh, there was Wilson again, trying to take us to church, always trying to take us to church, you know, whatever, which was kind of funny, and everybody, you know, was kind of laughing in the meeting. But I just, I don't know, I guess I'm just thinking that a lot of times you don't necessarily have to, it just kind of happens because we are who we are. It's, I don't know that it's going to, I don't know that we have to be so overt. So in my case, I think out of relationship over time things happen. I don't always necessarily. I think you're being much more strategic with ministry and but I'm thinking if you have, you know, an opportunity to empathize more and to kind of imagine yourself in their place. I think even if it just is to imagine yourself in the end user's place and to think, okay, what would I be feeling right now if I was that end user and I went through their abuses or their challenges of their life, and now they've got to hear my story? How can I best empathize with them and share with them and kind of put myself in their shoes? I think it's that kind of a thing. I think we naturally do it in a lot of settings, but I just think we need to be intentional.
Well, in the Bible, it says it, in parts of the scripture, Jesus says, or the Bible says, and Jesus had compassion on them.
Yes. That's awesome.
Compassion. But in other words, and he empathized with
them. Yeah. That's really a great.
Triggered something here.
I would have used that scripture had I figured that one out. That's a good one. No, I love it. Jesus said he had compassion. Yeah. No, I think you're totally there. You know, he had compassion on them. You know, like they were sheep without a shepherd. You know, that's one of the lines he used. And I think that's Jesus is is empathizing with the people. I believe. There was times when they were, you know, he was weary and would go away to pray, and then next thing he turns around and the crowd's right there with him. But he had compassion on them, like you're saying, and he, you know, would heal and do what was needed. But I think he was identifying with
it. Your use of the empathy has triggered something.
That's
really
exciting.
Something really powerful.
Oh, that's outstanding. I'm trying to understand it better myself. That's good. I really think it feels like it's the message, it's kind of a message, honestly, that I've been working on both in my classes and, you know, just in all settings, especially because design thinking starts with empathy, and I'm going, well, that's pretty godly. Well, that's kind of the right way to start, you know, and so it's been something I'm exploring,
sure.
You know. And I'm actually even working on a book, so I appreciate your comment on the compassion piece. That's really good. that scripture will probably be in the book. Anyway, so thank you very much.